Welcome to Carittles. This week, working on an aeroplane, part two. The questions this cast answers are, do I have to work on business-related flights? What should I work on a business-related flight? And how should I prepare for working on a business-related flight? We're running our virtual Effective Communicator Conference starting on the 23rd of February. The purpose of this training is to learn and practice communication behaviors. And the outcome is that you are able to communicate better with everyone, no matter what their preferences are and what your preferences are. Once you can understand why it is they do what they do, where they're coming from, and you can adapt a little to their way of working, you'll be amazed at how much better your relationships become. Last week, we talked about what you could be doing on a plane, either going to an event or coming home. And now we're going to talk about those nitty-gritty details of what you can actually do on an aeroplane or what you can plan to do and what devices and what abilities you might have.
Yeah, we're going to get into some very specific stuff here, which hopefully will help and hopefully proves timeless, although we're going to talk about how things can change. And our first point that we need to cover is don't assume that you'll have ideal working conditions on your flight, okay? No matter the time of day, the airline, the departure city where you're leaving from, no matter your destination, doesn't matter if you're sitting in first, business, coach, doesn't matter the weather, you can't assume that your working conditions will be ideal on the flight. First, delays. Delays are common and they happen a lot. So just being tired from the uncertainty and waiting around can affect how you work on board your flight. Weather can be different at 35,000 feet and turbulence can occur even when conditions are ideal on the ground. And, you know, one of the things that I learned, you know, as I started flying more and more was that turbulence or the ability to predict turbulence, I guess, is for pilots is much more based on reports of other pilots flying that day.
Yes.
So if you're on one of the first flights,
the guy who went before me noticed some turbulence. When I get there, there'll be turbulence. But that's the only way they find out.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is if you're on the first flight of the day, it's a roll of the dice. You don't have those.
No.
And then even if you're not on the first flight, your pilot may say, because I've heard pilots say this, we've gotten reports that there's some turbulence around this area at 35,000 feet. So we're actually going to drop down to 30,000 feet and see if that helped. And I thought, see if that helps.
Yes.
We don't even know if that's going to help.
Yes.
Maybe it's worse. So, you know, you just don't know. And you can't assume that you'll have a smooth ride no matter which direction you're heading, headwind, tailwind. You can't make that assumption. And you can't depend on fellow passengers. You can't depend on, my seatmate will want to sleep or something.
Right.
So I'll
I'm
have
in
time
business.
To get work
Everybody
done.
Will be working. It'll be quiet. Mm-mm.
Yeah. I'll have my headphones on. Nobody will want to talk to me. Yeah. Guess what? That doesn't work. Okay. So you can't depend on your seatmates or your passengers. You can't depend on the fact that your fellow passengers did or did not bring their young child who is their first time flying and maybe they're an infant and you can't. You can't. You can do whatever you want. It's unreasonable for you to expect a parent to keep their young one quiet for an entire flight. Kids are restless. They get stir crazy and, you know, they're going to struggle sometimes, but they got to get from one place to another. So you can't rely on peace and quiet while you're working. There's also the distraction of flight attendants walking up and down the aisle, asking if you have questions or giving you instructions per the FAA. Here's another one. If you have you know, some people are pretty clever, and they check the seating chart before the flight, or right before they board, or maybe they got an in, or they've got a friendly flight attendant at the front in the galley, and they've got their little iPad or not iPad, little device, iPhone or something, and you can check the seating chart and just say, I had an empty seat next to me. Is that still going to be the case? All this. You can't rely on the fact that even if there's an empty seat the minute before you board, that there will still be an empty seat when you are on your flight. Can't rely on that.
No, because the guy four rows up whose power isn't working wants to come sit next to you because there's power there. And the flight that I was on a week ago, we were on a bigger aeroplane. And the day before, they changed it down to a smaller aeroplane, which meant that the aeroplane went from being 3/4 full to completely full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was no chance you were sitting on your own.
No, not a chance. And you don't know who else is on standby or who's, rushing to, or what other flights have been impacted. And
Airline staff that are deadheading,
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So you just can't expect any of that. Now, when we are talking about choosing a seat, we do want to keep that in mind. We want to try for the best working conditions we can get. And when choosing your seat, we have a whole podcast on choosing your airplane seat that has much more detail than we're going to get into here. But the short version of trying to be as productive as possible in your chosen seat is you want to choose an aisle seat that is on the three sides. So if you're in a plane that has a side with two seats and a side with three seats, then you want to be on the three seat side because that increases the likelihood that you will have an empty seat, just maybe, right? But you don't want to sit in the bulkhead. Bulkhead being that there is a wall in front of you rather than another seat. The reason you don't want to sit in the bulkhead is that you cannot stow your personal item in the seat underneath you. Well, because there is no seat underneath you. And so FAA guidelines say that you have to put everything up in the bin, which means if you wanted to work from a laptop or you wanted to have a bag with, thank you notes and your little accoutrement in there, you've got to put that all up in the bin during taxi takeoff and landing. And so you're not going to be able to have those items. You don't want to sit in the bulkhead.
And if there is turbulence and they turn on the seatbelt sign, you're not supposed to get up and get stuff out of the bin, right? That's the most dangerous thing to do. And as we were saying earlier, you can't rely on the pilot. Some pilots seem to be very, very keen on the seatbelt sign. And others, I really think we should have all sat down by now because, it's really turbulent. So even if you can't rely on the same thing happening with the same level of turbulence. And if your stuff is up and you can't stand up to get it, then you can't be as productive as you thought you were going to be.
Yeah. Shorthand is you want to have your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want your stuff up in the bin that you want to be working on. And you want to be as forward in the plane as possible, but not in the bulkhead. The reason you want to be as forward in the plane as possible is you may have a tight connection. And if you have a tight connection, you've got to be able to get off that plane and get to your next gate because there's nothing that'll derail your, we made the joke on the previous podcast, your travel day,
right? Yes.
your travel day away, then missing a connection and then having to reach out to the travel agent or the travel folks at your company, and then you have to explain to your boss that you missed the connection. And certainly things happen, but if you could have made it just by sitting more forward in the plane, do it. Yeah, don't take that risk.
So more stuff about the bulkhead, because apparently I'm paranoid about it. If you're on a short flight, the amount of time, if I fly from San Antonio to Dallas, the amount of time we're at 35,000 feet is about 4 minutes. It's all up and then all down. And if you have to stow your laptop for the up and the down, that's practically no flight at all.
Yeah.
And the tables on the normal seats kind of flip down usually from the back of the seat in front of you. The ones in the bulkhead come up from the seat, from the armrest next to you. And the worst of them are precarious. And the best of them are wobbly. They're just, it's just not a good table to work on. So that's another reason.
Wendy, I think there's a reason for that. I think the reason is that they always get stowed and put away. And so you can't see that they're broken or malfunctioning at a glance. And I think as whoever's, I don't know who's like checking them, but whoever's looking, you can easily see that one of those tray tables that comes down from the seat in front of you isn't functioning properly. And so it's easy for them to, whatever they do, flag it or tag it for somebody maintenance to fix. But if you have one of those ones that comes out of the armrest and it's broken or defective, it's just going back, right? And so someone would have to pull every one of those out, check it, make sure it works. And I don't think they have time to do that. I know some of these flights are quick turns, 20, 30 minute turns. So
you're right. And the fact that they go back into the armrest and nobody ever knows how to use them because they're very confusing means that they get banged and twisted and things because people are trying to like, well, how does this work? And you can't see where it's going into. So you can like, it gets skew with. So yeah, you're right.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. The way that it unfolds and stuff is a marvel of engineering. I will say that because it somehow folds and unfolds and there's a separate little thing and how does it, But that's why people don't understand how it works because it's so smart.
Use seatguru.com. This still works. We said this in our podcast all those years ago about choosing airplane seats, but SeatGuru still exists. It's still awesome. It will tell you what airplane is due to be on your flight and all of the seats on that flight. It will tell you where the seats are and it will give you a kind, it kind of, it's a green, it orange, like a red. Yeah. A rating of whether or not. And sometimes it's, you know, this seat doesn't recline. Well, I never want to recline because something about the way I sit means I want to sit up. And so that might not bother me, but it might bother someone else. So knowing which seats recline, which ones have power, which ones have extra leg room and so on is really helpful.
That's good. That's so interesting that you said that. I just saw a thing on social media that was like this epic debate, recline or don't recline.
Yes. I think that's been a debate forever, right? So make a choice of your seat as early as you can, because that way you get the choice that you want. You get the maximum number of choices if you do it early, but then check it regularly. So
yes,
because as I said, my airplane changed the night before. And in the last 6 months, I have never seen so many airplane equipment changes on flights than are happening now. It's almost one in two or one in three. And every time they deallocate all the seats and reallocate them. And the reallocation is never where you want to be sitting. It's just, you know, fate that it you know, that seat doesn't exist or they move you a row up or a row down, or it's just never your choice. So
yeah,
make sure that you're checking.
I think your point is so good because I do think if there's a change, it's more likely to occur closer to the flight. So check back frequently and almost increasingly frequent.
And it takes 2 seconds to look on your app. You know, every airline has an app. You open the app, it says, here's your next flight, and you click it, and it tells you which seat you're in. It's it's not something that's onerous.
Yeah. And in our 2009 podcast, gosh, that was a long time ago, we say that the seat you choose will become even more important in the future, as cell phone service and Wi-Fi is going to be coming to more and more flights. And from today, we're recording this in 2022, you and Mark were right. I can't think of a domestic flight that I've been on that hasn't had Wi-Fi. I think every domestic flight has Wi-Fi, nearly all of them. And international flights have Wi-Fi as well.
For a long time, that wasn't true. For a long time, it was some of the domestic and none of the international. But now it's all of the domestic and most of the international.
Yeah. And there's even news reports out now about airlines upgrading from air-to-ground systems, which rely on nearby cell towers, and moving to satellite systems. And these have the advantage of being more likely to have a connection, but the additional distance would increase the likelihood of lag. So the guidance is almost still the same. It's that you'll have more Wi-Fi, but you shouldn't rely on the Wi-Fi, right? So just because there is Wi-Fi doesn't mean it's good Wi-Fi.
And it used to be that three people on the plane were trying to use the Wi-Fi. Now it's
good point.
100% of the people, because a lot of the airplanes, to get to the entertainment, you have to log on to the Wi-Fi and you do it on your own device. And so now 100% of the people on the airplane are all trying to use the same not great Wi-Fi.
That's a great point. And as we're talking about Wi-Fi just a little bit, sometimes because of that, it's like a router, like they get bogged down on the airplane. And I've had a few times where it completely goes down and they have to reset it. So be aware that it could go down, you know, mid email send or mm-hmm. mid, you know, working on something and not saving it to the cloud or whatever, right? So just things to be aware of for sure.
And even if you are working on something and you are saving it, it can take forever. And then you're not sure that it's saved. It's really mm-hmm. frustrating. So don't assume either that you will have power, even if the airline and or seat guru says that you will. The yeah. particular power outlet at your seat might be broken, and they are not going to substitute another aircraft because your power isn't working. On a full aircraft, there's nowhere for you to move to. It's not even like you could say to the flight attendant, hey, my power's not working, I really need it. Is there somewhere to move to? Because the flights are so full, there's nowhere to move you to. And you might be offered compensation. Mike was offered compensation a couple of weeks ago for this very reason. Yeah. But what the compensation, the cash that you get a month later is no compensation when what you really need is power on that flight.
Right, right. You can't tell your boss, sorry, I didn't get that report done, but I did get $35 because I didn't have an outlet on the airplane. So is that any consolation? No, it doesn't work like that.
And you can assume that anything that you have been promised may or may not turn up on an airplane. So Wi-Fi, food, but like you can onto the airplane thinking, okay, I don't need to stop in the terminal for food or drink because there'll be some on the airplane. Nope. Mm-hmm. There may not be any. There may not be what you want. It may run out before they get to you and so on. You can't rely on having a tray table or that your seat's going to be comfortable or that the person next to you isn't going to talk incessantly. Everything mm-hmm. is dependent on the equipment and on the day. So when you're deciding what to work on, assume you'll have nothing and then you'll be happy when you have something.
Yeah. By the way, we do have a cast on how to engage your seatmate and there's a trick in there on how to disengage and get to work. But I had a quick story about this, and it's kind of embarrassing because it's an example of me not listening to my wife, which happens quite a bit. But when I first started traveling a lot for work, my wife would always be like, she would always say, hey, you know, I'm going to run to the grocery store. Do you want me to pick up any like snacks or anything for you to take on the plane? And I always, you know, I don't like carrying extra stuff. I'm, you know, when I'm traveling, I like to keep it very efficient, streamlined. And I was like, no, I don't want to bring snacks. They have snacks on the plane. There's food in the airport. Like there's food everywhere. I don't need more food, right? I mean, I step on the scale. I don't need more food, right? So I'm traveling and I can't remember what it was. It was second or third flight when I started getting in a rhythm of flying quite a bit. And I get on the flight, long flight, and they said, oh, we didn't get stocked up on, you know, food. And so we only have a limited options for food. And by the time they got to me, they were out. Mm-hmm. There was no food left. And I was like, what do you mean there's no food? I was planning on food. Mm-hmm. And so it's a small thing, but it's something I constantly tell my wife, you were right. Bring a snack, bring something small. Don't rely on the fact that there will be food because there may not be.
To be fair, you can go 12 hours without food. You don't actually need to be eating, but the distraction of hunger and the brain power that is reduced by low blood sugar, I need to eat.
Well, and you don't know, right? It could be that it's your return flight mm-hmm. that this happened on. And you were, you know, hustling back and forth to meetings. You didn't get a chance to eat on your way to the airport. You're rushing. So, you know, who knows what happens? You just never know. And so, yeah, you don't want to be distracted by the pangs of hunger while you're trying to get work done. Great point.
Before or after you attend the ECC, you can purchase our Effective Relationships series of podcasts. They are 3 hours long, but they go into great depth about your relationship with your directs or your boss based on your profile. So if you know you're a D and your direct is an I, then we have 3 hours of specific guidance for you, understanding that person and how to get more out of them, or if they're your boss, how to get more out of them. If you go to our website, look under products for effective relationships, you'll find all the details. Next, keep abreast of the FAA and airline rules. And if you didn't know this, the rules change frequently. And what may or may not have been allowed on one flight may or may not be allowed on the next. Literally, you can get on an airplane, change in the airport, you know, change flights at the airport, and on the second flight, not be allowed to do whatever they allowed you to do on the first one, because some of it is up to the people that are
enforcing it.
Yeah, exactly. The rules are not uniformly implemented in a single airline, let alone across the airlines. And so you can't ever be sure what's going to happen. But at least if you know what the FAA rules are or what's been changed, you can have a clue. You know, when Corona first started and it went from you don't have to wear a mask to you do have to wear a mask, at least, you know, those headlines were so big that everybody saw them. If they change something now and it's, you know, a little thing like, oh, you can now use your laptop on takeoff, you probably won't know that because it's not publicized unless you have some source or, you know, you just quickly Google, are laptops allowed, or FAA rule changes in the last month or however long it is since you last flied. And what's funny about this is I was writing this and I had written, consider the advantages of using a tablet on a plane, so an iPad, that kind of device, because you are allowed to use those when you take off and land, whereas you're not allowed to use laptops when you take off and land, so you can continue working. And what was funny about it is I was saying this to the presenters, the group of people who fly the most, and someone said, no, you're not allowed to do that anymore. And I was like, I'm writing it into a podcast. And literally, as I'm writing, the rules are changing.
Right, right. Well, and there's nuances, right? Because the tablet is okay, but if it has a keyboard attached, it's not okay. But I, you know, and now someone's going to listen to this and catch me on an airplane, but my iPad has one of those magic keyboards attached to it. And I work from that thing during taxi and takeoff and landing. And I've never had anyone say anything. If they did, I would just take off the keyboard part, right? I would just take off the case. But I've never had anybody say anything. And so I don't know. And maybe that's the airline I fly. Maybe that's, you know, just the flight attendants on the flight and they're busy. They have bigger fish to fry and, you know, whatever it is. But knowing the rules is the perfect starting point, because then you have to understand all the nuances of the enforcement of the rules. And yeah, very, very helpful.
And you said anything with a keyboard. When I went back and looked at the FAA rules, and there's a difference between stowed and secured. Anything with a keyboard has to be secured. So stowed means it has to be in the overhead bin. And secured means it can be in the seat back pocket in front of you. So one requires you standing up and opening the bin. The other one only requires you to lean forward to get your thing. And secured also means it could be in your pocket. It's weird. And the FAA says that they require the personal electronic devices, which is what they call them, PEDs, to be stowed or secured for a number of reasons. For example, the potential for electronic interference, which I don't think anybody believes happens now, but it's still on the list. The potential for the device to become a projectile in the event of an emergency. That's why they don't let you have laptops, because a laptop hitting someone's head is much more serious than a tablet hitting someone's head.
That one I do believe.
Yeah. People tripping over charging cables when they're trying to exit in an emergency. You can imagine. I just have to think about like where my cable was and where the power outlet is. I guarantee to trip.
Mm-hmm.
The potential for passengers to miss safety instructions or to fail to follow crew instructions because they're listening to, you know, something on their iPad, or they're listening to something on a laptop, or they just have those noise cancelling headphones on and they're just not listening to, and it's just silence. And this is a mixture of FAA regulations and advisories, and the airlines have some latitude in how they implement the guidance. So, for example, the FAA says passengers can hold small personal electronic devices as a means to secure it. In other words, you can put it in the seat back pocket in front of you, or you can hold it on your lap. But this method is not preferable. Like, there's a million ways you could interpret that, from I'm absolutely allowed to be holding it on my lap to I really shouldn't be holding it on my lap. And so that's one of the reasons why it's implemented differently.
That's why I love whenever preferable is in a guideline, right? Because whose preference in it is it? I would prefer to have it on my lap so I can do
exactly.
work. You would prefer that I put it somewhere else. The person in front of me would prefer not to get hit in the head with it if we run into, you know, turbulence or something. So it's whose preference is it are we talking about?
Could be anyone's. And another reason it seems that there's no continuity in the rules is because different equipment is rated differently. So different airplanes have different ratings. So for example, you are sometimes allowed to have your belongings at your feet in a bulkhead seat because the aircraft that you're in has reinforcements at the bulkhead. So the reason you're not allowed to have it normally is because if there was a crash, your stuff would fly through the bulkhead because they're just, you know, bits of cardboard. But on some airplanes, they're actually not bits of cardboard, they're reinforced, and therefore that danger doesn't exist and you're allowed to have your stuff. And so that changes the rules that you're asked to follow. So if you think, oh, I'm definitely going to work on this because I'll have this piece of equipment because this is allowed, you may be wrong.
Yeah, that's a great point. Since one of the requirements for every passenger on an aircraft is to follow crew instructions, there's no way to be sure or to predict what will be required on any particular flight, because it very much is going to depend on that flight crew and what they're choosing to enforce, or what they're, you know, what particularly, you know, what are their kind of peccadillos. However, you can get a warning order by following FAA announcements, reading the updates from the airlines, and talking to your colleagues who fly frequently as to what their recent experience has been. This is incredibly helpful if you don't fly a lot. Again, we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah, when I was at Dallas, I thought, oh, today's the day that they let everybody who has not passed Security 101 in the airport, because the things people were like, had laptops in their carry-on. And they were like, oh, I have to take my laptop out. And it was at the bottom of their carry-on, like underneath everything else. So, of course, the queue's held up while they do that. And I'm like, did you not know that that's what the rule is? And that's another place where the rules are different every time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're ready, you're ready. So we've given you a bunch of things to think about in this cast. We'll come back next week with getting your equipment ready, so getting your devices and so on ready so that you can be as efficient as possible on the aeroplane, and choosing the kind of work that you're going to work on to make it easier to work on that work. That was a lot of works, but we'll explain. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.